Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reichert, Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. First on the docket today, former officer Derek Chauvin wants his charges dismissed. Second, Letitia Stauch, that's right, the mother in the Gannon Stauch case charged for murder, is writing letters to the judge. Wait till you hear this. Third, a man has been freed after 44 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. Fourth, a school teacher and nationally known President Abraham Lincoln impersonator has been arrested. And for guess what? Next, our cold case of the day. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant winner from last week and our new contestant for the dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. If you haven't done so already, I'd ask you to hit that subscribe button, hit that like button as well. And as always, leave us a comment. Man, there's been a lot of comments. Our comments have been on fire lately. Well, you are now tuning in to the most dangerous show on YouTube. That's right. Apparently, anything we say on YouTube is too insensitive for anything that we say on YouTube is apparently too sensitive for anyone over the age of 18, even. And that's right, because the facts can be a stubborn thing, the law can be a very stubborn thing, but guess what? The truth is the truth. You can spin it. We look at it based upon the facts and the law. Let's analyze these cases as a lawyer would. First on the docket, former officer Derek Chauvin, that's right, the officer charged in the death of George Floyd, wants his charges dismissed. And you may say, oh my gosh, Scott, everyone has seen the video of George Floyd. It's obvious and it's apparent that George Floyd died at the knee of the officers in this particular case. Well, guess what? We've talked about other officers in this case who have filed motions alleging the same thing that George Floyd's attorney is asking the court to do. And what former officer Derek Chauvin, through his counsel, is asking for is for the judge to drop all the charges. And their argument is, hey, judge, this man who was 46 years old at the time of his death, died of a drug overdose not caused by the officer planting his knee in the back of Mr. Floyd's neck. Mr. Chauvin's attorney is a gentleman by the name of Eric Nelson. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you may not like this. You may say, no, these officers killed Mr. Floyd. This attorney is doing his job. He has support behind this theory that he is submitting to the court. Now, I think ultimately it will not be the court dismissing these charges, but ultimately if a jury decides whether Mr. Floyd died because of his own conduct or that of the police officers will ultimately be the decision of the jury. Now, quick recap. Mr. Chauvin is charged with second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. He's pled not guilty to all the charges. Now, according to filings made on behalf of Mr. Chauvin through his counsel, it is alleged that then Officer Chauvin was acting upon his training, the training that he received from the Minneapolis Police Department in the use of maximal restraint techniques, and did so out of concern that Mr. Floyd might harm himself or the officers as they were struggling to arrest him. The Minneapolis Police Department's own policy states that maximal restraint technique says it, quote, shall only be used in situation where handcuffed subjects are combative and still pose a threat to themselves, officers, or others, or could cause significant damages to the property if not properly restrained, end quote. And Mr. Nelson, Mr. Chauvin's attorney, included that quote, as well as other training materials as it related to this maximal restraint techniques. Now, Mr. Nelson argued on behalf of Mr. Chauvin in his motion that the training materials appear to contradict a statement made shortly after the incident by the Minneapolis police chief that he had not seen anything that says you place your knee on someone's neck when they're face down and handcuffed. And Mr. Chauvin's conduct basically states is that any risk created by Mr. Chauvin conduct lies largely with those who train the Minneapolis Police Department officers and those who approve such training, and not Mr. Chauvin, since he was just following his training. Now, where this is really going to get exciting is that Mr. Nelson, on behalf of Mr. Chauvin, also cited the autopsy conducted on Mr. George Floyd that found that fentanyl and methamphetamine in Mr. George Floyd's system, a combination of drugs that Mr. Chauvin says is known as a speedball. He also specifically noted in his pleadings that the Hennepin County Medical Examiner's postmortem report showed that Floyd had hypertensive heart disease, hypertension, and sickle cell trait. Floyd also purportedly told the officers that he had contracted COVID-19 and was still positive for the virus at the time of his death, which was confirmed during the autopsy. Mr. Chauvin's attorney states simply, Mr. Floyd could not breathe because he had ingested a lethal dose of fentanyl and possibly a speedball. Combine this with sickle cell trait, his pre-existing heart conditions, Mr. Floyd's use of fentanyl and methamphetamine most likely killed him, not Officer Chauvin, as his attorneys argued. The attorneys stated, adding fentanyl and methamphetamine to Mr. Floyd's existing health issues was tantamount to lighting a fuse on a bomb. The attorney also added a footnote, quoting the Hennepin County Medical Examiner, Dr. Andrew Baker, saying, quote, if Mr. Floyd were found dead at home, alone, and no apparent causes, this could be acceptable to call an OD, an overdose, end quote, ladies and gentlemen. Now, a lot of people aren't going to like this stuff, but these are facts. People always say, oh, attorneys are just out there making stuff up. No, and I guarantee you, as I've stated before, these officers are going to have experts that are going to come in and state that the drug use of Mr. Floyd, his pre-existing medical conditions, were a significant factor, and that you cannot say that these officers caused the death of Mr. Floyd. Now, the prosecutor will probably argue that even if that was there, even if those drugs were there, that's not what killed him, and that these officers are still somewhat negligent, or may say reckless manslaughter, because they didn't call the police early enough. Now, the problem with that particular argument is that the prosecutor has locked themselves in based upon all the hype of this particular case early on, saying that these officers actually killed Mr. Floyd. Now, we know the family of Mr. Floyd, through his attorneys, brought in some heavy-duty pathologists to say that this it was a homicide, which completely contradicted the official medical examiner's version. The medical examiner ultimately did modify his position a little bit, stating it was in fact a homicide, but the reality of it is this will be a battle of the experts, and a jury is going to have to decide whether Mr. Floyd was killed or whether Mr. Floyd was somewhat at fault based upon his drug use in this particular case. Taking fentanyl would certainly cause one to breathe. And as you may recall, the video from the body cams that were released showed that Mr. Floyd was complaining about not being able to breathe prior to ever being placed in the car or on the ground. I'm sure the defense attorneys are going to argue that was a symptom of the fentanyl use, and that is what is responsible for the death of Mr. Floyd. And the prosecutors, in response to the motion that was filed, stated that they're going to seek an upward sentencing departure from state judicial guidelines if the defendants are found guilty. That trial is currently scheduled for March of 2021. We'll see how that goes. whether it proceeds or not, since many, many states are on limited schedules as it relates to the COVID-19 matter. Other officers have made the same argument that Mr. Chauvin has in this particular situation. Their position is basically that they were actually acting in Mr. Floyd's best interest because he was acting erratically, resisting arrest, and they were concerned that he was going to injure himself by falling or hitting his head on the sidewalk or being struck by oncoming vehicles or even injuring himself in the squad car. Mr. Chauvin is also stating that he was clearly being cautious about the amount of pressure he used to restrain Mr. Floyd, and he actually pointed out in the video where he was able to raise his head several times while he was prone on the ground. I assure you, the attorney, although he's probably watched these videos hundreds of times, they have expert witnesses, and these are laying out the arguments that the experts were going to make at trial. I believe the judge will ultimately say these are questions of fact that need to be decided by a jury. Either way, that argument is going to upset somebody. Can you imagine if a judge were to throw out those charges? I don't think that any judge has the chutzpah to throw out those charges and leave it to a jury. And then a jury is going to have to decide. And oftentimes, jurors are under a lot of pressure from what would happen in the community. Obviously, we've seen what's happened in the community, but that's why I think that this trial needs to be televised from beginning to end so that people can see and hear the evidence. And if a jury returns a verdict for guilty or not guilty, people can understand how the decision was reached. Next on the docket, let's talk about Letitia Stauch. That's right. For those of you who don't recall, Letitia Stauch is alleged to have murdered her 11-year-old stepson, Gannon Stauch, and she has been writing letters. That's right. Let me tell you, what is the most terrifying thing that can take place for a criminal defense attorney is when you get an email or some sort of notification from the court that your client is writing the judge. Particularly alarming is the fact that when your client still is waiting for competency to be resolved by medical professionals. Why is this terrifying? Because anything written in those letters is considered an admission and can be used against the client in any way. Now, sometimes it's not bad when you have a client that you think is not competent to proceed because the letters oftentimes come across as very delusional, completely erratic, and really just are tantamount to gibberish, which only confirms everyone's belief that the client may be in fact not competent to proceed. But in the letters, and you can take a look at these letters here that she has written, Ms. Stauch goes on to claim that, first of all, she's had limited access to her attorneys since she's been in custody, only actually meeting with them in person rather rarely and no more than three times. The first thing a judge will tell any defendant is, I have no authority on how to tell the sheriff's office to run their jail. If those precautions are in place, if the public defender's office isn't sending their attorneys to the jail to meet in public, what can you do? You can't. You have to accommodate them the best you can. Ms. Stauch also is complaining that she has been abused in transport, which includes injuries to her ribs, her head and ankles, as well as bleeding and a loss of feeling in her hands several times. Now, these all may have resulted from the fact that they probably clamp her down a little tighter in those cuffs than maybe they would. But as you may recall, Ms. Stauch allegedly tried to escape when she was being extradited back from South Carolina, and they actually had to stop in Kansas and keep her overnight because of her Houdini attempt and trying to escape. Ms. Stauch also complains that she is being threatened by other inmates. And in fact, she received various threats in her peanut butter because she provided evidence of not only her innocence, but evidence that will show through her private investigators that she is in fact truly innocent. She then goes on to theorize that there must be some sort of runner in the jail who has access to her food, and she's absolutely terrified as to what will happen next. I would have to say, well, Miss Stauch, obviously, we hope that everyone in the jail is treated humanely. However, we've talked about this before, there is a hierarchy of people in the jail. People being accused of murder can be high on the scale, unless, of course, it's against women and children. And here, Miss Stauch is obviously accused, and we'll give her the presumption of innocence as it relates to the death of Gannon Stauch. But the prisoners in the jail may not necessarily be affording her that privilege. And it seems like Miss Stauch may not be making friends while she is in custody. Miss Stauch further goes on because she complains that she has not been able to successfully participate in her defense because of the COVID-19 and only gets 3 calls a week at the jail. Now, obviously, a defendant has a right to participate in their defense and to assist their counsel. That's actually imperative that the defendant be able to do that. These are all complaints that will fall on deaf ears with the court because it's not his job to make sure that she's getting enough visits and phone calls at the jail. Most likely, none of these issues will be heard until and if the competency evaluations are returned and there is a finding of competent or incompetent to proceed. I assure you, I bet Ms. Stauch got a jail visit from her attorneys as soon as they received notice that she was writing letters to the judge. Don't write letters to the judge if you're a defendant. It is not going to do you any good, and it just shows that you're perhaps being a little bit unreasonable, particularly if there's allegations of competency and those have not been resolved yet. I think Miss Letitia Stauch is not doing herself any favors. She needs to sit down, shut up, and listen to her attorneys in this particular stage of the proceedings. She will have plenty of time, it's called trial, to tell her side of the story, not pretrial. Next on the docket, ladies and gentlemen, a North Carolina man sentenced to 80 years in prison for a sexual assault and burglary was released late last week after spending 44 years behind bars for a crime he didn't commit. Now, we have talked about this before, and I have represented people from all walks of life who have said and thought, I would never need a criminal defense attorney. This could never happen to me. The system is going to make sure this doesn't take place because this is an injustice. Well, guess what? This gentleman spent 44 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. Mr. Ronnie Long has always maintained his innocence, and that truth has finally come out. That's a long time to wait. And Mr. Long is now 64 years old. Now, the state of North Carolina finally admitted that it could no longer defend the case and asked the state court after the federal appellate courts concluded that Mr. Long has had a series of injustices in his case. When Mr. Long received word from his wrongful conviction attorney, who was a Duke law professor, Mr. Long stated he originally couldn't believe it. He just kept saying, are you sure the state can't go back on their word? They're really going to stick with it? Because he's probably heard these promises long before. Mr. Long has no faith in the criminal justice system because he believes that it has failed him. This horror story for Mr. Long began in May of 1976, was accused of breaking into a home in Concord, North Carolina, and sexually assaulting a 54-year-old white woman by the name of Sarah Bost. Although there was no physical evidence tying Long to the scene, he was convicted by an all-white jury and given this 80-year sentence. After spending 30 years in prison and always maintaining his innocence, he finally learned that the Concord police investigators had tested more than a dozen pieces of evidence and had actually hidden the results of the evidence. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have talked about this before, all right? It's called Brady v. Maryland. The state prosecutors, the police, have a duty to turn over all information in a case. Particularly heavy is a duty of exculpatory evidence. Anything that would reduce the potential criminal responsibility to any defendant has to be turned over. You can't hide it if it's favorable to defense. Bottom line, well, guess what? 43 fingerprints were found at the crime scene, and not a single one matched Mr. Long. Don't you think that would have been significant for the defense attorney to know and to cross-examine, to develop alternate suspects? You bet. Did the defense know that at the time of the trial, that a rape kit had actually been taken and that evidence had been taken from the victim? No, that did not happen. The prosecutors hid that. Did the defense know that there was a hair found at the crime scene that did not match Mr. Ronnie Long? No, that wasn't turned over. The prosecutors and the police hid that information. That, ladies and gentlemen, is not plain fair. Now, originally, when all of these post-conviction proceedings began, the state prosecutors, they kept arguing that even if any of that information or lack of evidence was turned over to the defense, it wouldn't change the outcome and that the verdict should stand. However, last week, the Fourth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruled that Long's rights had been violated by a troubling and striking pattern of deliberate police suppression of material evidence. Guess what? The North Carolina Attorney General finally decided he could no longer, through his attorneys, justify with a straight face that Mr. Long received a fair trial or that he was in fact guilty of any crime. 44 years, ladies and gentlemen, that is an injustice for anyone. Now, over those 44 years, can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen, most of our viewers, you know, mid-30s plus, think about it, being in prison for longer than you've actually been alive right now. It's one of the hardest things you have to explain to a client. Can you imagine Mr. Long, 20 years old, saying you got an 80-year sentence, good luck? You can't even fathom that. All the places, think of all the places that you have traveled to over the last 44 years. Think of all the people, all the things that you have done, family members, births, deaths, things that you've experienced that you never would have experienced if you were in prison for 44 years, let alone being an innocent man. A lot of states have adopted laws where people can be paid a certain amount of money if they have been wrongfully prosecuted and they are in fact innocent. North Carolina has a program. I'm not going to tell you that I know what the amount would be at this particular point, but Mr. Long should receive something from the state of North Carolina. And I think the bigger issue needs to be, who were the prosecutors? Who were the police officers involved in this particular situation? And if the statute of limitations had not run, or if perhaps they're not dead, given the fact that this was 44 years ago, they need to be prosecuted. At a minimum, their names need to be put out for the public to know who was responsible for this man's wrongful incarceration. This, ladies and gentlemen, is an absolute tragedy. I hope Mr. Long gets a big check from the state of North Carolina. Let's take a quick break from the docket. Now, what that story shows is that there are some very bad people in the world. And in that particular case, as it relates to Mr. Long, the bad people were the prosecutors and the police hiding evidence. But the moral of that story is things are not always as they appear to be. And that can happen to any of you unless you know exactly with whom you are dealing with, all right? Let's say you meet somebody on a dating app. Sounds legit, right? Guess what? 1 in 10 dating profiles are fake. Romance scam costs people hundreds of millions of dollars a year here in the United States. And guess what? Those scams where somebody's taking advantage of you are up 140% since 2018. Those dating scams cost people as much as $2,600 because of that other person's fraud. Find out with whom you are dealing with. It matters, okay? If you go to crimetalksearch.com, you can sign up for a background subscription service. Find out a person's true identity. Check that information through their social profiles, their phone number, their email addresses. Find out the person's real name, age, address, property records, criminal records if they exist. Do not become a victim, ladies and gentlemen. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Find out who you're going to be dealing with. Maybe you tell them, maybe we should just check each other out and see if everything checks out okay. If they're legit, they're not going to have any problem doing it. If they're concerned, they're going to probably give you 10 reasons why they don't need to check. Give yourself that peace of mind. If you're getting involved with anybody, particularly from the internet, please check them out. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up for your background subscription today. You'll be absolutely happy you did. Next on the docket, if you can't trust Abraham Lincoln, who can you trust? Well, guess what? There was a Lincoln impersonator that went around to schools by the name of George A. Buss. He's 63 years old, and he's a retired school teacher from Illinois, and he was a nationally known Abraham Lincoln impersonator. Well, guess what? He was arrested Friday morning in his home in Freeport. That's right. On felony allegations of producing child pornography and a misdemeanor for patronizing a prostitute. Is nothing sacred anymore? Mr. Buss, who is known, has taught thousands and thousands of school children about Abraham Lincoln, arrested after a six-month investigation. There's also allegations, which brings me to the bigger point here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not saying that all old people that want to be around young kids are weird, twisted, and perverted. No, we won't go there at all. But you certainly want to be cautious. Imagine all the people that sat on Mr. Buss's lap over the years as this Lincoln impersonator. Do you think he was just being nice to the kids, or was he possibly getting a little sexual gratification from this? Certainly things that prosecutors are going to argue. Certainly going to be something that the defense is going to have to consider, that was he really there to impress upon these young children the importance of Abraham Lincoln, or was he there to somehow satisfy his own sexual gratifications, be around children? I assure you, one thing is absolutely clear. Mr. Buss will not be around any children anytime soon. Ladies and gentlemen, you just can't make this stuff up. But I've said it for years, and you always have to wonder, why are some of these people hanging around your kids? Well, the answer is simple, ladies and gentlemen, because that's where the children are, okay? Use a little common sense. If you're not going to let some guy babysit your kid, why are you letting him be the gymnastics coach? Why are you letting him be the only guy being the female volleyball coach? What? They don't have women that can do those things? Not saying everybody that's in those positions does it, but you really got to question sometimes why it is. I mean, there's just so many people out there that are trying to get access to our children, ladies and gentlemen. You really have to be careful. You have to run a good background check, see what comes up. Go to crimetalksearch.com, all right? Just had to throw that in there, but it's so true. I'm telling you, we promote things that we believe will be helpful and protect people out there. Knowing the people that your children are coming in contact with, the people that you're going to meet online, it's so important these days just to be careful. Don't become a victim, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, after 25 years of criminal defense, I've seen so many circumstances that I have highlighted to friends and said, oh, that's weird. And I said, oh, no, Scott, you don't know what's going on. You're just being a little cynical. And guess what? It happens. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not doing this to say that I'm right. I'm doing this to make sure that it doesn't happen to our subscribers, our viewers out there. Please use your common sense. Information is power. And in today's world, you should be able to find it at your fingertips. Go do it. Next on the docket, our cold case of the day. And I think what is curious for me, particularly a lot of these John Doe cold cases, and it's almost kind of sad, is that all these cases where somebody's disappeared and either A, nobody knows, or B, nobody cares to have actually gone to the police and say, I think somebody's missing. Maybe, just maybe, we can help solve these cases, find out who they are. Maybe it will lead to what caused their death. Our story begins today, back on October 29th, 2010, where a man was out walking his dog along a private Lake Michigan beach in Covert Township, Michigan, and he came across the body of an unidentified man who had actually washed ashore. At the time, the water temperatures were about 51 degrees Fahrenheit with high waves and strong winds. Investigators believe that given the weather conditions and the locations of the body, that the deceased man could have come from Michigan, Indiana, Wisconsin, Minnesota, or even Illinois, including the Chicago area. Now, forensic investigators were able to determine that the body was that of an either Asian, Hispanic, or Native American male between the age of 25 and 40 years old, and that he was probably 5'6" tall with black hair and weighed roughly 173 pounds. This gentleman had extensive dental work and was wearing a blue and gray Nike brand swimsuit. Police considered drowning to be the probable cause of death, and he may have died months earlier. But given the fact that the police don't know who this individual is, any further investigation to close this matter out is still pending. So hopefully, somewhere, someone knows some information or has overheard someone talking about their missing friend, their missing brother, their missing uncle, and may have some information that could lead to the discovery of the John Doe found in 2010 in Covert Township, Michigan. Somebody knows something. Let's help solve this case. If anybody has any information, please call the Michigan State Police Special Investigation Section and ask for Sergeant Scott Ernestus, area code 269-657-5551. Next on the docket, the winner from our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week last week. And yes, it was a close call, but this was a three-way tie because we grouped them all together. Our winners were Mr. Zion Hall, Tremaine Hill, and Tyreek Williams. That's right. These three geniuses had a GPS on for a previous criminal offense and then went on a series of burglaries and home invasions. Nice move, gentlemen, and at least you gave the police the exact tracking locations of your whereabouts because of the GPS unit. You, gentlemen, are our Dumb Criminal Contestants of the Week. But don't worry, we're not going to send you just one mug. No, gentlemen, no. We know where you are. We've found you. We've done our search. Guess what? We're not going to give you just one mug because we don't want you to fight over it. Don't need you getting any more trouble. But we will send each of you a Crime Talk mug. Congratulations. And if you do, contact us. Call us. We'd love to talk to you about the events that got you this prize here today. Now, as always, if you want Crime Talk merchandise but don't want to become a Dumb Criminal Contestant winner, go to the link below, order all the merchandise that you need. Our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day is a man who we will give the presumption of innocence to, but his name is Enrico Toro, 35 years old. Now, this man was just out trying to have a good time at Disney with his family, ladies and gentlemen. Stop the madness is what we have to say here. That's right. So Mr. Toro and his family were simply trying to get into Epcot. And then what happens? That's right. A Disney employee says, your masks don't meet the safety requirements set forth by Disney. So the family accommodates Disney, goes back to their car, swaps out their masks, and returns. However, Disney was not having any of this because, ladies and gentlemen, if they let in one snot-nosed kid with a runny nose, you never know where the COVID will end, if it will at all. That's right. So Disney doesn't allow masks that are not proper. That's right. Disney will not allow anyone wearing a neck gaiter, an open chin triangle bandana, or any kind of face covering containing valves, mesh material, or holes of any kind. Now, I'm not exactly sure what caused this rule to be made by Disney, but it seems somewhat arbitrary and capricious. However, it doesn't matter. They're a private organization, private company. They can require whatever they want. I'm sure it was some sort of ploy by Disney to sell their Disney-approved masks right over here for $59.95, I'm sure. Well, guess what? Mr. Toro was having none of this. When the manager told Mr. Toro that one of the children still did not have the proper mask, guess what? Mr. Toro exploded, saying, call the police. They're going to shoot me to leave. Whereupon, Mr. Toro assaulted the manager at Disney. At least he didn't assault Mickey or Minnie Mouse. That would have been traumatic to the children there for sure. However, since it was just a complete random act of violence upon a stranger, thank God those children won't need any further counseling. Needless to say that Mr. Toro was arrested and released on a $500 bond. He has court on September 15th. Hopefully, Mr. Toro will take the proper attire to the courthouse so as not to be kicked out and not have the proper mask. Mr. Toro, this is our teachable moment of the day because you never know where this is going to come in, but you probably should go to the Disney website and check out their mask rules before taking the family. And Mr. Toro, this is a gateway crime. Clearly, you can't go around assaulting people. And please don't tell everybody that when the police come, they're going to have to shoot you to remove you. Is that only escalates the situation. Perhaps you could, as we've mentioned once or twice here before, take a deep breath and let it go. Just think. What does it cost to get into Disney these days? What is it, $300, $400, $500, $600? It was like $300, what, 15, 18 years ago when I took my kids there, for God's sakes? I doubt it's any less expensive. My God, you think Disney would throw in a damn mask? Maybe Disney should be our dumb criminal contestant of the day and not Mr. Toro. But needless to say, Disney wasn't charged with a crime. Mr. Toro, you were. You're a dumb criminal contestant, and I kind of hope maybe you don't win. At the end of the week, but good luck in court. That's all we have for you today on Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. Have a great day. Don't forget, tomorrow we go live 6 p.m. Mountain Time on both Facebook and as well as YouTube. We'll see you then. Have a great day.